Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
I'm Kim Reynolds of Dogman.com with Chris Vetter, Scott Eklund. I am in Houston, Texas, where the weather's cooperating. It cooperated with us last week down in New Orleans and cooperating with us again this week down in Houston, where, you know, a lot of people were saying it could get hot and humid real quick, but temperatures in the high 50s, low 60s, expecting a little bit of rain today, but it shouldn't matter. We are in a covered dome stadium. The stadium, by the way, had a chance to visit that on Saturday. Spectacular stadium. So it was interesting. Some of the guys were pointing out that they've had some Final Fours in that stadium. So kind of showing me the layout where they would put the basketball court. And unlike the Superdome and the old Kingdome, where those roofs were pretty much, not let any sunlight in, a lot of sunlight being let in with this stadium. So you're getting a lot of natural light. But we're down in Houston, Texas, guys. Chris, I put in the prediction, we've been doing this for so long. We've been through so much. We started Dogman.com April 1st, 1997, and there was a lot of pre-work that went into it back into 96, but we're on our eighth head coach. We've seen a lot of ups. We've seen a lot of downs, and it's just having a hard time wrapping my head around what's really going on. I think once this game is over, we may have a better appreciation of what's happened this year.
100%. And I don't think there's any question of that just because of the quick turnaround. And that's been kind of a big storyline this week when, you guys have talked during the media day on Saturday. I noticed one of the common questions that you were asking was just, how are you guys dealing with the quick turnaround? Because I think last year it was more like 2 weeks, 10 days at least. And so to be able to literally go from one Monday to the next and to go back to Seattle, get a couple practices in, and then go back down to Texas and play a game in a couple days, that's pretty unusual. And so we'll see who kind of best deals with the intangible parts of all this stuff, because that's a huge factor of how this game's going to go tonight.
Well, the other thing that's kind of wild, Chris, too, is last week we're in New Orleans and we're staying at the Sheraton downtown. The team hotel for Texas was across the street. The team hotel for Washington was a couple blocks away. A lot of the events were, within a block or two. The stadium was walkable less than a mile. Down here in Houston, everything is spread out. I mean, it's sprawl down here. We're getting on shuttles to go to the stadium, and it's taken a half hour. It's 45 minutes to an hour to the airport. We're on the media hotel. We're about 8 miles away from where the team hotel is. We had a media day down in the convention center, and that was a half hour drive. So everything we're having to do is busing, and the team is too, and the stadium is a ways away as well. So it's just a lot more spread out down here, where last week down in New Orleans, everything was so close. And, I remarked about it before, that Sugar Bowl down there, that's a well-oiled machine. They've been doing that for quite some time. But the turnaround down here in Houston, they had a short notice on who the teams were going to be, where the Sugar Bowl had a lot of advance notice. And it's just seems like a lot more scrambling and running around down here, not only for us, but the teams and the officials as well. By the way, just saw Cam Cleland. He's not staying here. I showed him to the hospitality room. Cam Cleland went in and destroyed the hospitality room. That boy can eat. So anyways.
But okay, well, I was going to say the other thing that it was different about New Orleans compared to Houston is that you were also dealing with, you mentioned the sleep factor maybe the night before the game. That was New Year's Eve. Yeah. You don't have to worry about any of that nonsense in Houston. I mean, Sunday night, what's going on January 7th? You know, I mean, so you just, I think, you know, the sprawl, like you said, Kim, as well as the timing of the event, I think makes it so that these guys should get plenty of rest, plenty of rest.
Well, yeah, and it's something that wasn't said a lot. You know, after the win last week, you know, what time did that game get over? I can't even remember, but quite a bit of the team hit Bourbon Street after the win.
Yeah, well, if I remember correctly, the last play happened like right before 9 o'clock our time. Pretty sure it was pretty close to that.
Yeah.
So
11 o'clock here, and yeah, the boys went out and hit it. I know Carson Bruner and his family went out, and quite a few others. I don't think you're gonna see that tonight. Regardless, again, this place is just so spread out. I've never been to Houston before. It's pretty spread out. And speaking of Houston, I texted you this morning. Reggie Williams lives down here. So for those who don't know, there's a Scott Eklund that works for the University of Washington, who's a photographer, and a Scott Eklund that works for us, of course. And they're always getting confused, where our Scott's always getting asked to do, wedding
photo shoots.
Yeah, photo shoots. And the other Scott Eklund, he's getting constantly hounded about recruiting stuff. And I got a text from Reggie. Where's your boy, Scott Eklund? He's got some photos I need. And I'm trying to explain to him there's two Scott Eklunds. And Reggie had a tough time wrapping his head around that. So it was kind of funny. He goes, what do you mean there's two Scott Eklunds? I said, there's two Scott Eklunds. I just want my pictures, Kim. Okay, well, it's the other Scott Eklund. What other Scott Eklund? It was kind of funny. So,
I have friends that I've known for 30, 40 years that still ask me, so are you shooting photos at the University of Washington? I'm like, yes, and I have not told you that. Yes. It's like, really?
Yeah.
Okay. So, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, just being around the team, the little that I have, seemed pretty relaxed. Just at the media day on Saturday, it was just pretty relaxed. Yeah, it's just another game for them. They seem like they're ready to go. And, you know, it's, I guess, a short turnaround. They don't have a lot of time to think about it. But, you know, you got to listen to quite a bit of it, Chris. You heard Jamarcus Shepherd. You heard, you know, Troy Fautanu. You heard Michael Penix. But just kind of what's your takeaway, you know, from back home that you're kind of sensing from all of this?
Well, I think it stems all from Kalen DeBoer, right? I mean, he is the generalissimo of this whole thing. I mean, and it's everything that he is about kind of filters down through the program. And when these guys talk about treating their process, and it's not like they're treating the game like it's different than all other games, because everyone knows that it's different from all other games. What they're trying to do is they're trying to not deviate from their process. They're not trying to, they're you know, even though it is bigger than the Arizona State game or bigger than the Washington State game, they're not trying to treat it any differently than those games. And that's an edict that DeBoer feels very, very strongly about. And so I think keeping these guys in their same mode, in their same work week, in their same patterns and behaviors and everything like that, I think is absolutely crucial to DeBoer and how he thinks these guys will be able to perform at their maximum.
Yeah, and the Michigan fans, and you probably noticed it on social media, and that they've been pretty respectful towards Washington. They realize that this is going to be a really good football game. Of course, you're going to have knuckleheads and knuckle draggers on each side of the fence, but the respect for Washington seems to, be genuine. And, you know, a lot of people mentioning it's going to be wild, just not only playing in this game, but October 5th, the rematch in Husky Stadium.
Yeah, it's going to be crazy.
I mean, how often does that happen, where you've got a national championship and then they play in the season, the next season?
Yeah, it doesn't happen often. If it, you know, I couldn't tell you. Didn't Washington in 1985 play BYU right after BYU essentially stole that national champion? And they just destroyed Washington, too. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And I remember that game. And, you know, but it doesn't happen very often. And so this is going to be a lot of fun later tonight and also next year when they come to town, because I mean I know that it's part of a whole new package and a whole new reason why they're playing out here, but it's kind of the return trip that we never got because of the COVID season. You know, they were supposed to be here and it got canceled. And then Washington went there in 2021 and they never rescheduled. And, you know, some people think that that was, you know, foreshadowing on their part, but I don't know if they thought that far ahead. But no, I have seen nothing but respect from most of the Michigan fans and most of the Husky fans. You know, they know this is, these two teams are very evenly matched and strength against strength.
Yeah.
And I think it's just going to go out there. And I want to see a great game. I don't want to see, you know, a team blow out. I want to see a great game. We saw two great semifinals. I'd like to see a great national championship game with, obviously, it'd be more fun to watch Washington win. But I just want to see a great game where both teams are playing to the top of their potential and see who comes out on top.
I don't know if you guys could hear that. Could you hear that roar in the background?
A little bit.
Yeah, I looked down, and I've never seen so many motorcycles in my life going by the hotel. Hundreds, filling the whole street. But, yeah, they're still going. That roar you hear, I thought it was an airplane, but it's motorcycles.
Hey, Tim, real quick, you mentioned the future schedules, and you mentioned how Washington and Michigan are going to be playing in Seattle in October. Did you guys happen to see the rest of Michigan's non-conference schedule by chance?
No.
So they play Arkansas State, which obviously Washington had played a few years ago. But the other two non-conference games that they're hosting in Ann Arbor, on August 31st, they're playing Fresno State. And on the 7th of September, they're playing Texas.
Yeah.
It's just weird how these things go around. It's just really, really weird.
Yeah, you know, I had a conversation with a guy from the Atlanta paper who's writing a thing on the Pac-12, the demise of the Pac-12. And, you know, we were talking about, you know, we're giving up Phoenix and Tucson for Madison, Wisconsin. We're giving up Tucson for Iowa City. We're giving up San Francisco for Ann Arbor, Michigan. We're giving up L.A. for Columbus, Ohio. You know, so yes, we want, my biggest takeaway is, and I said, well, I won't need as much sunscreen, but, you know, talking quite a bit. And I had a chance to talk to Reese Davis on Saturday as well. And I don't know how you guys feel about this. And I asked him about, you know, what he felt that the impact of West Coast football was going to have on the Big Ten next year. And he said he thinks it's going to be pretty dramatic when, you know, Washington, Oregon, USC and UCLA come into the Big Ten with their high powered offense. You know, those teams like Iowa that are trying to win games, you know, 12-10 or 17-14. It's going to be real interesting on how these high flying offenses really mesh into this conference, who tends to focus on, you know, big, like they say, big boy, tough guy football, you know, and play physical brand. And it's all about the defense.
Well, if you listen to Michigan fans, they'll tell you that the roster construction that took place, and ironically enough, it started with Courtney Morgan, who's now Washington CEO. And I don't think it's ever been a case where the guy who was essentially responsible for the roster construction at both finalists happens to be the same guy. I mean, that is just crazy. And so massive respect and compliments to Courtney, because that's pretty special. But just in and of itself, Michigan fans are telling everyone that this lineup for the Wolverines was completely done in response to try to beat Ohio State when they had high flying offenses, when they had Stroud and they had, you know, Chris Olave and some of these other guys that, you know, in 2020 and 2021 and these high flying offenses that Ohio State was putting together because they hadn't beaten them. And then Michigan's now beaten them. So, that's why I think Michigan fans feel really, really confident about playing this Washington team tonight, because they feel like Washington and Ohio State match up pretty well. So we'll see how that actually ends up in theory, because I don't think that any of the Ohio State quarterbacks, in terms of being a college quarterback, I'm not talking about in terms of what they've ended up being like in the NFL and things like that, but I'm talking about just straight college quarterbacks and the impact a quarterback can play in this particular game tonight. They have not seen a quarterback like Michael Penix.
Yeah, and when we talk about this matchup, Scott, we talk about the Michigan offense, and a lot of the talk down here is, does Michigan have enough offense to keep up with the explosiveness of Washington? Washington's liability is probably on the defensive side of the ball. And I took a look that, and I think, you know, you'd probably agree with me. One of the key things for Washington is going to be that third down efficiency. Can they stop Michigan on those third downs? Because I think they rank, I think Washington ranks number 84 in the country on stopping their opponents on third down. Now, granted, that might be skewed quite a bit from those first couple of games, but I think that's going to be the big key, is that explosiveness, because we've seen Washington on those third and seven, third and eights, and giving up and getting gashed by 10 and 12 yard runs. But I think that's going to be the key, Scott. Do they have enough explosiveness to score to keep up with Washington's offense?
Well, I don't think they do, but the thing is, they won't need to if they can grind things out on the ground. And if Washington is used to getting, I don't know if there's a number out there, but the possessions per game for Washington is probably somewhere, what, 11, 12 per game, whatever it is. And if they can limit Washington to 8 possessions, that's going to be huge in Michigan's favor. And how's that going to happen? That's going to happen by handing the ball to Blake Corum and getting behind that offensive line and letting him grind things out. And so Washington's going to have, I mean, Thule is going to have to be huge. Ale is going to be huge. Fa'atui Tuitele is going to have to be huge. Jacob Bandis. Those guys are going to have to be just bricks in the middle of that, in the middle of that defensive line, where they don't get moved and they don't allow gaps to open. And then Braylon Trice and Zion Tupuola-Fatui are going to have to be really good against the run. And Sakai and Jacob Lane and all these other guys who play, they're going to have to be good against the run, because if Washington's going to win this game, they've got to stop Blake Corum from, I'm not saying you have to hold him under 100 yards, but you can't let him get, you know, 6, 7, 8, 9 yards per carry, especially when he's averaging 4.7 for the season. And because unlike what Texas and Oregon did, where they were gashing Washington, but instead their quarterback friendly offensive coordinators decided, well, now that we've got these big runs, now we're going to start opening it up and throwing it. Well, Michigan has no problem running it 40 straight times if they have to. And that is something that would bode horribly for Washington.
Well, and Jim Harbaugh yesterday said that J.J. McCarthy is the best quarterback he ever coached. Chris, you buying that hype?
No.
No, I'm not, actually. Especially
the number one overall draft.
I was going to say, especially when he coached Andrew Luck. So,
yeah.
But to the point in terms of what you guys were talking about in terms of what Jim Harbaugh is capable of doing, we saw it in Harbaugh's final year when I think they beat Washington like 40-0 or 41-7 or whatever it was. And then David Shaw the following year followed that blueprint with Andrew Luck and put 65 up on the Huskies. They run their power, they run their counter. And if you can't stop it, they're not going to stop running it until you figure out a way to stop it. And so that's Harbaugh's weird. It's interesting that, because Harbaugh obviously is a quarterback, but yet he will run to win. And he will not stop running it if you can't figure out a way to stop it. And he won't necessarily go away from it, much like Texas did with Sark. Kind of a fatal flaw with Sarkisian is that he doesn't stick with those types of things. And Harbaugh has no problem with that. Harbaugh, he's shown it historically, and Washington has seen it. They saw it up close and personal at Stanford.
Yeah. Scott, tell me a little bit. You've probably watched a little bit more film on Michigan than I have. Tell me about what you've seen with Michigan's passing game.
It's I don't want to call it pedestrian. They run some routes, but they aren't going to their passing game is set up by their running game. I mean, Roman Wilson is their big play guy. He's got 45 receptions, 735 yards and 12 touchdowns. But I mean, he leads in all three of those categories. And on Washington, he'd be like third or fourth on the team. Now, completely different offenses and they, you know, whatever, but you know, I don't see an explosive passing game. I think Colston Loveland, their tight end, is a guy that they use a lot like they use Washington uses Jack Westover. He's got 42 receptions, 585 yards, I don't know, 4 or 5 touchdowns, whatever it is. And then Cornelius Johnson is the next highest wide receiver, 44 for 579 and 1 touchdown. And then after that, no one has more. There's someone has 30, 22 receptions, 21. They just don't throw the ball that much. And it's because they haven't needed to throw the ball that much. The biggest thing for Washington is if they can get out to that early lead, kind of like what they did against Texas, kind of like what they did against Oregon, I think Michigan could feel the pressure to start maybe scoring a little bit quicker and keeping up with Washington. If Washington doesn't score quickly and they get in a grinded out game, that definitely benefits Michigan.
Chris, we've heard it all year. You know, the dynamic offensive line, offensive line of Oregon, the offensive line of Utah, the offensive line for USC, Oregon, again, we've heard it all year long. And now we're dealing with, you know, the offensive line at University of Michigan. But, you know, you take a look at their schedule and, you know, they played Ohio State. But other than that, they really haven't played anybody.
It's fair. I mean, if you're going to look at one team that's battle tested tonight, it's Washington. It's not Michigan. I mean, Michigan fans can say all they want, but they've basically just played Ohio State, Penn State, and Alabama. And that's great. I mean, that's top-notch competition. There's absolutely no question about that. But that's three teams. Washington could match double that, at least the number of teams, whether they were ranked at that particular time, what have you. To me, I don't think there's much of a comparison. So there's no question that what Michigan's going to see tonight is definitely it's not something different, because I think Washington kind of presents some similar challenges. But I think what Washington's going to see from Michigan in some ways is probably the same type of passing offense that Alabama kind of presented to Michigan. They're very statistically kind of the same, and they use it the same way to supplement their run attack, and much as what Scott said, because if you look at those numbers, you know, it's much like Texas's secondary. Yeah, the reason why Texas gave up a lot of yards through the pass is because, you know, no one could run against them. And so you look at some of these things that are happening with Michigan, basically a lot of people think that Michigan is just Texas's defense, but with better DBs, because we've seen what Michigan can do on that front seven. I think they're much more balanced than Texas was up front, because Texas has those two big uglies up front in Sweat and Byron Murphy. Yep. Well, Michigan's got three guys that they can put in the interior, and then they supplement them with guys on the edges that are really, really good. Whereas with Texas's ends, I don't think they really presented much of a problem to Troy Fautanu and Roger Rosengarten. And yeah, to be fair, Fautanu and Rosengarten are two of the best tackles in the entire country. So you could also argue that maybe Michigan hasn't seen tackles quite like this all year long.
Yeah, but staying on the offensive side of the ball, you know, when we're taking a look at this Michigan offensive line, Scott, does this Michigan offensive line compare to anybody that you've seen on the schedule? To me, they seem like Utah.
Utah or Oregon. They mash you a little bit more like Utah does rather than what Oregon does, which is pulling and trapping and doing a lot of other things like that. But Michigan can still pull and trap. Don't get me wrong. It's just that they want to just mash you. But they, against Ohio State, they lost their best offensive lineman, and I'm drawing a blank on his name, but they lost their leader. Yeah. And he's done. And so, you know, I'm not saying that the guy that they got to replace him as a scrub. He obviously wasn't, because of what they were able to do to Alabama's offensive line. But Washington needs to take advantage of the fact that they got someone new in there, and he's only had one game of reps with the first unit, really, for the most part. So, Washington has an opportunity to do some things. But it's really going to be, especially early on, I think Michigan's going to do their best to establish that running game. And if they can establish the running game, then it could be a very long long day on the field for Washington.
I think, honestly, I think that Michigan, like if Utah had not lost Cam Rising, if they had had a healthy Jaquindon Jackson, for instance, I think Utah would be a great comp right now for what they would present, similar to what Michigan is going to show tonight offensively.
Yeah, Scott, do you think they're going to ride Blake Corum, or do you think they're going to rotate in?
Well, I mean, he's the bell cow for them. I mean, they've got Donovan Edwards, who's a really good running back too, but Blake Corum is the guy. I mean, Donovan Edwards has less than half of the carries that Blake Corum has, and he has one third of the yardage that Corum has. So I see Blake Corum. He's their bell cow. He's the one that they've always relied on. He destroyed Washington, if I remember correctly, in the 2021 game. That was the one where Cameron Fabi-Kulanen took a terrible angle, and what did he go for about 65, 70 yards?
I was going to say, I think they had two running backs go over 150.
Yeah, one of them was Haskins, right?
Yeah.
The other one was Haskins. So, but yeah, I think Corum is going to be the guy that's going to get a majority of the carries. Now, if things get out of hand for the Wolverines, I think they'll rotate in Edwards, give him quite a few carries, keep Corum and Edwards fresh. But I think for the most part, Corum's going to be the guy who sees most of the carries.
Yeah. Before we start talking about the Washington offense versus the Michigan defense, a little surprised at the uniform combinations for both teams.
Not at all.
I think the all whites is perfect. I think that's what they wore at Michigan State, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, why not? Is Michigan is all blue, or are they blue and yellow?
All blue.
All blue. Yeah. No, it doesn't surprise me at all.
One thing I would say real quick, Kim, but putting a bow on this comparison between Michigan's offense and Washington's defense, I think the game plan is much the same as it was against Texas. I think bottom line is you've got two very, very competent, very efficient quarterbacks in Quinn Ewers and J.J. McCarthy. I think you've got two competent running games and explosive guys out wide, whether you're talking about Xavier Worthy for Texas or Roman Wilson for Michigan. I think bottom line is Washington has to take advantage of the opportunities when they are able to get Michigan behind the sticks, whether it's a penalty, whether they stuff them a couple times. They just cannot allow them to be able to move the chains and keep Michael Penix in that offense, Washington's offense, off the field. They have to get back on the field. And the other thing is that if there is a situation where they can get McCarthy off his spot and maybe he throws an off pass here and there that might be able to get picked, you got to make that pick. I mean, you look at one of the very first plays in that first series against Alabama. He almost throws a pick. He did throw a pick, but the Alabama kid was out of bounds. You've got to be able to take these opportunities to be able to get off the field and put Washington's offense on the field. Because if you don't, and you allow Michigan to extend and keep that game going in their favor, they're going to take advantage of that. They're going to slow things down. They're going to extend, and they're not going to allow Washington to get explosive.
From the world of Sonic the Hedgehog, a new hero arrives.
I am
ready. Is there anyone stronger?
No.
Tougher?
No.
Funnier?
I do not make jokes. I make warriors.
Knuckles, now streaming only on Paramount Plus.
Yes!
The wait is over. The Chi returns with new episodes on Paramount Plus.
What brings you to the show?
Opportunity.
Everybody get down!
Walk right up to the sun.
A new rain is coming to the South Side.
Never should have sent a boy to do a woman's job.
The Chi. New episodes May 10th. Visit ParamountPlus.com/The Chi to get a 50% discount off the Paramount Plus with Showtime annual plan. Offer ends July 14th. Subscription auto renews. Restrictions apply.
Yeah, when you talk about Washington's offense versus Michigan's defense, you know, and I talked about it, you know, we've heard this all before. The elite defenses, Oregon's defense is really good. Utah's defense is really good. Oregon State's defense is really good. USC's should have been good, but that was a disaster. Arizona turned out to have a pretty good defense and, you know, played Oregon twice. And the Texas defense was supposed to be really good. They haven't been able to slow Washington. There's only one thing that has slowed Washington down all year long.
Washington?
There's only one thing that has slowed Washington and stopped Washington all year long. And that was the flu bug that ravaged the team for 2 weeks, for two solid weeks. And that was the only thing. And a lot of people just don't understand, you know, those 2 weeks, how much the team was ravaged. And I talked to you about Michael Penix after that Stanford game, and he was a mess, you know. And every time I got a little tickle in my throat after being in that small room with Michael, coughing, hacking, wheezing, I was worried about he gave it to me. But the flu pretty much ravaged that team for two solid weeks. That's been the only thing that's been able to slow Washington down all year.
Yeah.
I'm curious because, you know, obviously the Stanford game was where you saw it the most pronounced. I'm wondering how he was affected against Arizona State and how much of that was Arizona State just really kind of clouding things up for him and making it difficult down the field for him. Because I think a lot of people, when I've seen the film study and people talk about it, they talk about that Arizona State game as being one of the key moments where a defense has been able to get Penix off his spot and get him maybe second guessing a little bit. And like I said, I don't know how much of that was due to what they were doing and how much of that was just him not feeling good and just not being right.
Not just that, he didn't have one of his top three receivers in that game either. I mean, right. That was a game that Jalen McMillan didn't even play in.
Right.
You know, he tried to play in other games. That was a game he didn't even play in.
Been rumors all year long since the Oregon game about Michael Penix and having a rib injury. Been rumors about that all year long. But with that long layoff and getting to the Sugar Bowl, it not only helped Michael Penix, but Michael Penix looked like a different guy with the 3 weeks of rest. Jalen McMillan, you know, he was no longer Jalen McMillan in the Texas game. J-Mac was back. And a lot of these guys who've been nursing bangs and bruises and all of that, they're going to be back to 100% full strength. Asa Turner's got the big club off of his hand, but, you know, Michigan's going to be healthy too. But you take a look at Michael Penix, Chris, and it wasn't hard to believe that he had something going on with his ribs.
Well, the conspiracy theorists out there are licking their chops and they're telling you, I told you so, because, you know, there's no one that thought the Sugar Bowl was a get right game for Michael Penix, but that's exactly what it turned out to be. And, you know, a lot of people are going to say, well, that's because he had time to heal up, rest up and get right. And, you know, it's hard to argue against that now because he showed everyone the side of him that we all saw very, very early in the season. Like, he hadn't thrown that well since September, honestly. Yeah. And just in terms of just production, being able to throw on platform, off platform, on the run, be able to mix things up. And to also have the ground game with it a little bit, not so much with Dylan Johnson at that point, but to be able to have enough run game to really be able to make that Washington offense even go even better and be even more explosive when they were able to take their shots. So, I mean, I hadn't seen him throw the ball that well since September, and that bodes well for tonight's game, obviously.
Yeah, and then, Scott, his ability to slip and slide, he got touched, but he didn't get hit, you know, so he was slipping, sliding, avoiding the pressure, and as well as he ran the ball, you know. Yep. And every time he runs the ball, I think we all hold our breath.
Yeah, and a couple of those were read option plays where he could hand it off, but he decided to follow one of his linemen right up the middle, and he gashed them for a couple nice big gains. I think he had three rushes for 19 yards, whatever that was, and those were big. And the other thing is, Kim, you talk about him not really getting touched. There was that one where Byron Murphy basically had a free run at him, and he just sidestepped him to the right through a perfect completion to, I think it was Rome, across the middle.
Yeah.
And, I mean, he's adept at doing that. That's what he can do. And Washington isn't going to hold up perfectly against Michigan. Michigan has gotten, I think the stat I saw was that on their opponent's dropbacks this season, Michigan has gotten pressure on the quarterback. Now, that's depending on how you determine pressures, but has pressured the quarterback 48% of the time. That's the best in the country. I think the next best was Oregon, which was like at, I want to say like 38%, whatever it was.
Yeah.
And I mean, it was, that's a ridiculous number. Almost half of the dropbacks. So that's something that Washington's really going to have to be careful about.
Scott, when we're talking about the pressure, the word is that Washington's going to see a lot more pressure on the edges, where against Texas, it was a lot more pressure up the middle. And I actually think that benefits Washington, because the pressure from the edges, the two best offensive linemen are the two tackles Washington has. And the interior is where the problem has been, is getting Michael Penix up the middle, you know, that pressure up the middle. And that's why I think we're going to see a lot more stunts and shifts, and maybe them try to get pressure with their ends up the middle instead of on the edges like they've been known for.
Yeah, that, I mean, that's the case. So, you know, just looking at the stats, Jalen Harrell leads the team with 6.5 sacks. Josiah Stewart has 5.5 sacks. Then Derek Moore has 5. And Braden McGregor has 4.5. Those are your top four guys, and those are all linebackers. I'm assuming some are edges and, you know, stand-ups and how they do all those kind of things. So Michigan, the one thing that people have said about Michigan is they aren't going to blow you away with a guy with big numbers or anything like that, but they rush well as a unit where they get that pressure from the edges and then they get that push right in the middle that doesn't allow the quarterback to step up. And when quarterbacks can't step up, that is big as well. And so Washington is going to – the interior, Parker Brailsford, Nate Kaleppo, Julius Bulow, Gearon Hatchett when he gets in, those guys are going to have their hands full and trying to make sure that they can keep Michigan pass rushers out of the lap of Michael Penix. Because if they can, I think – Washington's going to be able to throw some for some yards and score some touchdowns through the passing game.
And Chris, Michigan's defense is good, and Washington has only allowed 11 quarterback sacks on Michael Penix in 14 games. And I think Michigan's going to be good, but I think that a lot of people are maybe overestimating Michigan versus a very, very, very good Washington offensive line.
Well, it's certainly strength on strength. It's going to be a massive battle in the trenches because you look at a lot of what the Michigan guys are saying in terms of the media and whatnot. You look at that the three, basically the top three interior guys and their top three edge guys. So the edge guys like Harrell, McGregor, and Moore, and then Jenkins, Graham, and Grant inside, they're saying all six of those guys are NFL guys. Well, Washington clearly hasn't played a team where all the interior or all the guys up front were NFL guys. And we're not even talking about Colson and Barrett, the linebackers. They'll bring it any time. I think the key is, what does Michigan feel like they can get away with? Because they're a heavy pressure team. They're going to want to pressure with more than five guys at a lot of times. So not only is a guy like Dylan Johnson going to be extremely important for pass protection, and we needed to talk about Dylan Johnson, but also the tight ends, are they going to stay in to max protect, or can they be a factor down the field too? So can Washington use their communication that they've been known for all year long up front, be able to hand things off when these guys start playing games on them, when they twist and stunt and all that stuff? Can they stay solid and give Michael Penix the pocket he needs? Because they weren't able to do that necessarily up the middle against Texas, but Penix was able to see what was going and had enough time to be able to slide, to be able to have a game plan, to still be able to get that ball off, because we know how quick he is getting the ball off. And so it's going to be such a chess match within that football game, because there's no doubt that as good as Washington's offensive line is, Joe Moore Award winners, the Heisman Trophy of the offensive line, Michigan's their front is going to give them something that they haven't seen all year long.
Will Washington be able to run the football? Do they need to run the football?
Yes.
Yes and yes.
Yes, they absolutely need to run the football. Even if it's just enough to keep the Michigan's defense honest, to keep their edges, you know, when you have a little bit of RPO or a little bit of the inside-outside zone stuff, you've got to be able to slow down their ends a little bit and to keep them honest a little bit. I think the key is what Washington showed in the RPO game, and even a couple of those designed runs that Ryan Grubb gave to Michael Penix, added that little wrinkle now that Michigan is going to have to account for. That is a huge part of this, because regardless of how good Dylan Johnson's going to be tonight, and I just think that the way it's going to be is he's going to get that first run, and he's going to know within 5 seconds whether he's got it tonight or whether he doesn't. It's going to be that simple. He's either going to have it. He's either going to be able to help, create some production for Washington in that area, or he's going to have to allow guys like Tyrell Rogers and Will Nixon and some of the other running backs to take over and be those next men up, because he's going to know right away, I think. But they definitely need something.
One of the things that I think is going to be key tonight, and I thought it was going to be key versus Texas as well, is, you know, getting those defensive linemen to run. And that's where I think, you know, going into the season, you know, you guys told me, and it was kind of a crazy stat, that Dylan Johnson went into the beginning of the season with more career receptions than Romo Dunsey and Jalen McMillan. Now, if they can get some swing passes out there, this is where I think Jeremy Bernard could be a key factor in getting these little swing passes and these, which are basically runs, and getting, you know, the fly sweeps going to Jalen McMillan, Romo Dunze, and, you know, Jeremy Bernard, you know, and stretching the field horizontally before breaking it up the middle. I think that's going to be key, especially if they can get a couple of swing passes to Dylan Johnson.
Yeah, I think you know, those are all important. I think they will try to stretch these guys a little bit horizontally. I think they're going to make a bigger attempt to try to beat them vertically, obviously. But you look at their linebackers like Colson and Barrett, and like even the nickel, the Sainristil, still, those guys are everywhere. Those guys run around like crazy. And so to be able to try to beat them sideline to sideline, I don't know if Washington's going to have a ton of success doing that, but I think they're certainly going to try to at least give them some looks so they can play off them later.
It'd be fun to look at Ryan Grubb's playlist for today's game. But also, again, one of the keys to the game is the guy who's just stepped up, and it just seems like every time he makes a catch, it's a key catch, and that's Jack Westover, tight end.
Absolutely, absolutely. He's just, I mean, is he going to be healthy, though? And, you know, that's a big question, I think, heading into tonight's game is, how healthy is he going to be? Kim, thankfully you're there, and you're going to be able to see beforehand if he's even out there warming up, because I've heard some things that he might not even play.
Did you hear what Dylan Johnson said last week before the Sugar Bowl? Thank goodness for medicine.
Yeah, I get it. And I would be shocked if he doesn't suit up and try and go, but how effective will he be? And if that's the case, then you're going to need Devin Culp. You're going to need Josh Cuevas, Quentin Moore. Those guys are all going to need to step up and take some spots because, I mean, Jack Westover, I think, had 5 catches last week, and 3 of them went for first downs, and all of them were key first downs too. And so, yeah, I love watching Westover do his thing because, Chris, you remember you and I standing on the sideline talking to Jordan Pow when we found out that Jack Westover was going to walk on, and he goes, dude, please don't report that.
I don't want anybody to know. You saw those guys on Saturday when you saw Dylan Johnson walking around, when you saw Westover walking around, what have you. What were you thinking? Do you think they're going to be okay? What do you think?
Me?
Yeah.
I didn't see anything out of the norm. Jack being his usual aw shucks, you know, mentality. He looked fine. And Dylan Johnson, you know, he said, you know, cut off my leg and I'll still find a way to play. You know, he's just,
I mean, I don't know. If anything, I saw Devin Culp run into Devondre Sweat and I thought he was done. Literally. I thought that was the end of his career.
Well, it was kind of like,
I mean, I'm joking, but it looked like, whoa, it looked like he literally ran into a brick wall.
Well, no, it was kind of like, you know, getting hit by a Cadillac.
Yeah, it's crazy.
He got hit by the corner of a Cadillac, you know, or a big old Lincoln Marquee. But I mean, I'm not hearing anything. I didn't see anything out of the unusual on Saturday. So, you know, we'll see. You know, I'll be in the stadium before the team gets there. I'll be there bright and early. I got some radio stuff to do. I got some TV stuff to do with CBS. So I'll get there bright and early and just, you know, make sure you're checking the message boards on dogman.com. That's where we're going to put all that stuff. But, you know, I think it's also going to be interesting. And we've yet to talk about the strength of this team, you know, with a little bit with Michael Penix. But these wide receivers, they're ready to go. I mean, they're four or five deep, you know, with Giles Jackson asking him about his former teammates on the other side. And he really didn't want to talk too much about it. But, you know, Giles Jackson, I think, is going to be ready to go. So that's your fourth wide receiver, or your fifth wide receiver with Jeremy Bernard in there. And Rome seems ready to go. And by the way, it was a real interesting post that Will Conroy put out on Twitter that you put out there, Chris. Tell people a little bit about that.
Well, yeah, and I don't remember. Will didn't really give a time frame on this. Like, was it literally right when Rome got to school? I can't remember.
He said it was the first day.
Was it the first day literally on campus?
That's what he said. I could have sworn that's what it said.
He goes to Will and asks him if he's the basketball kind of player development guy, and he's like, sure, yeah, I can help you. And he goes, yeah, I need to learn how to box out so I can take care of these little DBs. And so, yeah, so basically it sounds like Will Conroy helped him learn how to box out, like on rebounding and stuff, so that he could basically shield and use his body to shield off DBs to make catches and make really tough contested catches. And as he as he's shown the last couple of years, especially, he is probably the most elite receiver in college football when it comes to contested catches.
Yeah, I texted Will. I said, I saw this. Rome owes you. He needs to come in and catch your, teach your bigs how to hang on to the ball. So,
yeah, I was going to say real quick, though, and Scott, you might correct me if I'm wrong on this, but I seem to remember when Washington played at Michigan in the Jimmy Lake era, and Giles Jackson did not have a great send-off. Like at the end of that game, I think, did he get into it with some Michigan fans?
I don't remember that. I do remember that he did not have a very good game, though.
I thought I remember him as he was leaving the field. He was kind of getting some from the Michigan fans.
It wouldn't surprise me if that
I think was he the case. He gave it right back. So
yeah,
to say that he would be motivated tonight for this game might be a massive understatement.
Well, Josh posted the story on Giles Jackson from the audio that Kim got, and he basically said, that's what fans do. He goes, I'm good with all my teammates, all my former teammates and everything like that. And he goes, I don't really have any extra motivation for this game. It's just another game. But I think he wouldn't mind getting one more win over his former teammates.
Yeah, for some reason, I think the wide receivers are going to be more heavily involved in the game plan today, with maybe the short screens over the middle to Rome, the fly sweeps to Jeremy. I think you'll see Rome carry the ball a couple of times. I wouldn't be surprised if you see Jeremy Bernard in the Wildcat. I think you're going to see some things like that where we're going to see a little bit more of the utilization of these wide receivers. And I thought one of the wildest things that set the tone for the game was early in the game. What was it, the second or third play of the game? He went deep to Jalen Polk, and it was kind of like, buckle in, Texas, because this is going to be what you're going to get all day. Kind of expecting one of those moments early as well.
Well, it'd be nice. It'd be great for Washington's offense to have something like that happen. But, Michigan's corners are not bad. I mean, they're pretty darn good. What's the name of their
Well, Will Johnson's their main guy.
Yeah, he is. But who's the guy from Liberty? Is that Will Johnson? That's not Will Johnson.
From Liberty. Where in Liberty? What are you talking about, Liberty? Liberty College?
Yeah. Wasn't.
No, I want to say, is that Wallace?
Oh, UMass. UMass.
Is it Wallace?
Yeah, I think it is.
Okay.
I think it was, but they've got some good guys back there. That, yeah, he was at UMass. Wallace was at UMass. So they've got some quality back there, but I think a lot of it has been helped by their pass rush and the fact that they can get pressure and control things up front. And if you can do that, it makes it so much easier on your secondary. Well, I think that if Washington can keep Michael Penix, from getting pressured too much, I think Washington can make some plays on that defense, as good as it is. And they are talented back there. I don't know if there's any defense that I would ever say, would be able to keep up with Washington's wide receiver group, because it has yet to happen. And I'd be shocked if it happens in this game.
Yeah, the other thing to keep your eye on is, Dylan Johnson said on Saturday he's not 100%. So and Washington rode him pretty much for Oregon and Texas. Tybo got in a little bit, but I was kind of surprised we didn't see Will Nixon. The Texas game, Sam Adams didn't even suit up. How comfortable are you with Tybo getting 10 carries, Scott?
Not as comfortable as I would be if it had been Cam Davis,
yeah.
Tybo isn't he isn't a guy who's going to be super physical in the running game. His game is more about explosiveness, making guys miss in space and doing things like that. Will Nixon would have to be that guy. And I could see Will Nixon getting some carries this game. But I really think that, Dylan Johnson's health, like you said, Kim, is going to go a long way in determining, and his availability, whether what he's able to do is going to go a long way in helping Washington win. Because if Michigan sends a blitz, Dylan Johnson has shown that he's really good at picking up the blitz. Will Nixon is good. He's not great at it. And Tybo is still learning. So, we'll have to wait and see.
Is that a situation where they might bring in Richard Newton?
Maybe. Yeah.
Good. Yeah, just a real interesting note. Had a chance to talk to Cam Davis a little bit, and when we got to see 15 minutes of practice on Saturday, which is basically stretching, but Cam Davis and guard Memelar on the sidelines doing rehab drills. Yeah, I never want to go through rehab.
Yeah.
I mean, those guys, I mean, that was just some ugly stuff that they had them doing. And I'm going, I just can't even imagine having to do this nonsense while you got
you're talking about the stuff with the rope and all that kind of stuff that they were doing. God.
No, they were pushing heavy sleds for about 40 yards, bending over and just pushing, you know, just grinding on those things, just pushing it down 40 yards, pushing it back. And then it was his guard's turn and they're just looking like, we're just pushing weight, and these guys are, and it's hard. It's hard. And, you know, you got your guys out there preparing for a bowl game and you're rehabbing. So, yeah.
Sisyphus, man. They're Sisyphus. That's who they are.
Yeah. So, hey, just, you know, before we close this out, just a couple of other quick notes. Johnny Nansen got hired at Texas as co-defensive coordinator. So, coming from Arizona, a little bit. We'd heard that rumor, you know, for a couple of weeks. A little surprised to see that move.
Yes.
Yes. You know, I've never had a problem with Johnny. I know that he had his own demons, and he and Sark together were kind of like, what's their face? The toxic twins from Aerosmith, you know. I mean, those two, when they were here at the University of Washington, I really hope for both of their sake that they have beaten that enough to where if they're hanging out together, they aren't going out and doing things that could jeopardize their future professionally and personally. So, but, you know, Johnny Nansen has proven to be a relatively good defensive coordinator, and he's going to be learning from one of the best defensive coordinators in the country in Pete Kwiatkowski, and I don't think that's a bad thing.
Yeah, and that position opened up when Jeff Choate, the former Washington coach, took the head job at, was it UNLV or Nevada? Which one?
Nevada.
Yeah, and then a lot of the talk around the media day on Saturday, Jim Harbaugh was getting, you know, pestered about possibly going to the NFL and what they're telling recruits about the possibility and upcoming recruiting violations. But, you know, the word is seems to be if he lives, because there's a lot of talk about people worried about Michigan coming after Kalen DeBoer if Harbaugh left. But it seems, you know, that the Sharon Moore would be the guy, and he's the guy who took over while Harbaugh was under suspension. But it sure seems like Sharon Moore would be the guy.
Yeah, if Sharon Moore wasn't the guy beforehand, his 6-game stint as the head coach proved that he should be the guy.
Yeah. Also, you know, the word down here on Kalen DeBoer's contract extension is he just pretty much doesn't even want to deal with that until after the season. I don't know if you saw the quote from Troy Dannon about Kalen DeBoer and the contract, just wanting to delay any talks on that, where Kalen said, "I'm not superstitious, but I'm a little stitious." I don't know if you saw that or not. So that was pretty interesting. Also,
it's a good quote, by the way.
What's that?
It's a good quote.
Yeah, I'll tell you, the coach is really taking it all in. If you had to guess, what coach do you think is taking it in more?
Oh, come on. There's only one choice.
Who?
Jamarcus Shepherd.
No. Nope.
Eric Schmidt.
He's taking it all in because he's leaving after the season. And, you know, so
he's going to a program that probably doesn't have a chance to be in this position.
Yeah, you know, he's doing it for career advancements, of course, you know, going to be defensive coordinator. And that's, you know, then his next stop would probably be a defensive coordinator, you know, big time school, and then being a head coach. But, yeah, Eric Schmidt, you know, on Saturday, he was taking it all in, you know, because he's, you know, these are his partners. These are his running buddies. He's been around these guys for a long time. So, you know, it's kind of scary, you know, taking on a new position and leaving a program like this. And
that's rolling.
Yeah.
Well, especially since he doesn't really have any connections with Sean Lewis, who is going to be his head coach. I mean, they've apparently become fast friends, according to Schmidt, after having a few conversations and such. But when you kind of put your career, you know, momentum and trajectory into a guy's hands that you barely know at all, yeah, that can be a bit daunting, I would think.
Yeah, and the conversation I had with Courtney Morgan, because there were rumors of Courtney going back to back to USC because, I mean, he went to Manchester High School, excuse me, Westchester High School. He played with Larry Triplett back in the day, you know, and I asked him about that. And he goes, no, he goes, you'd be a fool to leave, you know, working for Kalen DeBoer, you know, and it's kind of a scary thing because it's such a good, you know, culture up here. Seattle's a great place to live. Washington is a great school. And, you know, I'm sure that, you know, Kalen talked about coaches on his staff having other offers, having great opportunities and electing to stay here. So it'll be interesting to see who fills the position that Eric Schmidt is leaving open and see if as well if there's any other coaches leaving for, you know, possibility of bigger positions. So something definitely to keep your eye on.
Hey, Kim, also real quick, just with all the stuff you just laid out with, you know, finding a replacement for Eric Schmidt, DeBoer's extension, all of those things, UW kind of football related. You know, Washington fans, I'm sure, would love to get all that stuff sewn up as soon as possible. I'm sure we would as well. But the Washington coaches have earned a break. So after tonight's game, they're not going to be they're going to be scattered. And the other tough part about this, too, is that this happens right at the same time as the coaches' convention. And, you know, so typically coaches would go to the convention and they'd be a part of that stuff. Well, these coaches have been busy game planning, prepping, practicing, doing all that stuff. So once this game is over tonight, they're going to be going, they're going to be scattered. They're going to be with their families, at least I think for like the next week. That's what we've heard that they'll probably be taking at least a week off. And so for any Washington fans that are looking for immediate answers to things like DeBoer's contract or coaching replacements, coming, going, all that kind of stuff, portal stuff, you know, it's going to take a minute. It's going to, these guys need to take a breath before they take another step.
Yeah, I've heard their coaches, you know, get a week off. They're going to take a week off. And I'll tell you what, when I get back, I'm taking a couple of days of sleep and I'm taking a couple of days off. And, you know, you guys need to rest. When do we have a basketball game, by the way, Chris? They're on the road.
Oh, so. Thursday. No, Arizona State, Thursday.
Is that here?
Yeah, it's in Seattle.
Please tell me it's not an 8 o'clock start.
It's an 8 o'clock start.
Odd.
Yep. Oh, your favorite. See, now you're complaining about late starts. I thought Scott was the only one that complained about late starts.
I am not the only one who complains.
You are about not late definitely starts. Not the only one. No. 8 o'clock on Fox Sports 1, Thursday night, January 11th.
I just need to recharge my batteries. So tonight's going to be a long night.
And it's good. Who doesn't?
Yeah, the victory.
If you think it's a late night for you, yes, it's going to be a late night for you. It's going to be a later night for Scott and I.
Yeah, the victory celebration is going to go long into the night, so I'll make sure and get Softy's reactions on the sideline as well. So
he cried after the Sugar Bowl. What's he going to do after if they win the national title?
Oh, my God, when Dylan Johnson went down and they stopped the clock. Oh, I wish I would have filmed Softy. Oh, my God. I thought he was going to pop a valve. I thought he was going to run out and grab a referee. I mean, he was popping. He was a different shade of red with that vein on his neck, just going 100 miles an hour. So
I didn't see it, but I saw it talked about on the Dogman on the hardcore board. Apparently, Brock Heward was being interviewed with some radio down maybe in Phoenix, and they were asking him about that play where Johnson got hurt, and I guess apparently he. I guess he allowed people to peek into the moment where he saw that. And I guess it was like he was screaming at his television to like find people to drag him off the field because it was like, figure out a way to get off the field. He goes, if I'm Dylan Johnson, I'm literally just crawling on my hands and knees trying to get off that field without help. But you know, the answer to that is they got to change the rule. I mean,
they absolutely have
to change that rule. So,
yeah. So let's go ahead and wrap this up. It's going to be a long day. It's going to be an eventful day. It's going to be a historic day. And this is a game people will remember until they take their last breath. So, Scott Eklund, let's wrap it up.
Yeah, it's, you know, it's go time, man. It's hard to believe we're here. I think everybody thought Washington could win a conference title. I think everybody thought Washington had a good chance of going to the playoffs, if they won a conference title. I don't think anybody expected a perfect season and for Washington to be in the national title game. I just, this is uncharted territory at this point in Washington's football history. And so enjoy a Husky fans, because I was a student at UW in 1991, and it's been 32 years. So Washington needs this. They need it badly, and Husky fans need it badly. Let's hope they can come out with a win. Their first national title, not unsharing, but you know, one that they don't share with somebody. And that this will be huge.
Chris Fetters, wrap it up.
Yeah, I think I posted this on the board after the Sugar Bowl win for Washington, that my first big trip when I was a kid, I was 9 years old, was going with my dad and my stepmom at the time, and we went to L.A. For the 78 Rose Bowl. And that was the game where Washington was massive underdogs to Michigan. Bo Schembechler was in his pomp going up against a third-year coach and Don James that no one really knew about nationally. And they had some kind of unknown quarterback at the time, a junior college kid named Warren Moon. And all Washington did was go ahead and win that game 27-20. A couple picks at the end. I think Michael Jackson, I think, did Nesby Glasgow have a pick near the end there as well? But either way, they were able to salt the game away at the end, much like Washington has been able to salt away some games at the end of this season. I'm not seeing a lot of parallels necessarily between the 77 team and the 2023 team, but I am seeing some parallels in this football game between Washington and Michigan, especially when it comes to my life, because that was the first big trip I had ever made. That game pretty much solidified my fandom as a kid growing up, following my dad's team, and it's kind of followed me ever since. And so I would say just this last month or so, and not to, you know, your guys' situation's been different, but, you know, personally for me, having to go through a move for the first time in 25 years in the last month, on top of all the stuff that has gone on here, it feels like I've just tried to compartmentalize things and just kind of get into this bubble. And so I don't think I've really appreciated just how historic this run has been for the Huskies. And I think win or lose tonight, I'll come out of it and, you know, give me a week or so, I'll have some thoughts on it for sure. And, you know, but let's make it a long night tonight, guys. Let's soak this stuff up and milk it for all it's worth, because, you know, this is, like Scott said, this is the first time they've gotten a chance to be an unquestioned, undisputed number one national championship team. And if they win the game tonight, this will be the greatest game in the history of Washington football, no question about it. And this team will be the best team in the history of Washington football. 1991 was incredibly special. I almost think if you put those two teams head to head, 91 might beat 2023. You never know. Be a hell of a simulation to have. But if they are able to pull it out, and I think they will, that there's going to be a lot to talk about tonight, guys. That's all I can say.
Going to be a great game tonight. And you know, had a chance. I was texting with Jen Cohen, and she's an emotional wreck. Her DNA is all over this program. She built this. She had a strong hand in building. She had a strong hand in getting Chris Peterson to come here. She had a, you know, she was the one who pulled the plug on Jimmy right away when she knew it wasn't going to work. And she hired Kalen DeBoer when not a lot of people knew who Kalen DeBoer was. And she'd been at Washington like 23 years. So, you know, Jen Cohen's heavily invested into that, and she's down here for the game. Also, had a chance. You're going to kind of crack up at this a little bit, but saw Dan Lepsey. Dan Lepsey is here, you know, the old guy who worked in the athletic department. Him and Craig, I'm trying to remember Craig's last name. They're down here doing stats for the bowl game. So,
Sarge.
Yeah. Yeah, Sarge is here. And then, you know, shout out to Bart. Bart Fulmer has been the equipment manager. We're on our eighth head coach. He's on his ninth because he's been here ever since Don James. So Bart Fulmer, the equipment guy who's seen it all. Shannon Kelly in marketing has been, you know, right working side by side with Jen. She's been at University of Washington for a long, long time, and her DNA is all over this. And, you know, the guy that we deal with on a regular basis, the guy at University of Washington we deal with more than anybody else, Jeff Bechtold, has also been here since the Don James day. And, you know, Jeff has just been magnificent to us, you know, this year. So, you know, just shout out to those guys. You know, there's some of us have just been through a lot of wars. We've been doing this since like 1997. you know, some of these people have been there since, you know, day one with us, and we've been there, you know, for such a long time. So I just put out, you know, some friends saying this just means more to us because of what we've been through. Michigan hasn't been through the, you know, they've been through some, a little bit of a dark time, but they haven't been to the valleys and the canyons that we have over the years. And it just means more to us. You know, Michigan gets that national attention. So many of the teams, and I mentioned this on the message boards, so many of the people that are going to be tuning in to watch this game haven't seen Washington at all this year. They probably haven't seen Washington play forever. It's going to be the first time in seeing Washington, not only in a long time, but this year specifically. They haven't seen Michael Penix or Romo Dunze or some of these other guys. So they're going to get a chance to see Washington. When I talked to Troy Dannon, he said revenues this year have been the best they've ever been. Revenues are way up, and they need to be way up. So it'll be interesting to see what season tickets are for next year. So it's going to be a long day. It's going to be a long, hard work, and we will grind, and we will be done when we're done. And we won't be done when the clock says a certain time. We're going to give it all to you guys. We're going to stay up as long as needed. We'll get it to you. We'll have a great podcast after the game, and we'll have stories. And if you're not following me on Twitter, follow me on Twitter. I'll have a lot of video that I'll post out on Twitter from pregame. I'll have some pregame notes, and Scott and Chris will take my Twitter stuff and put it on the board. So it's going to be a long day. So that's why we do this, isn't it, guys? Scott, do you remember when you wanted to quit?
Yes, I do. And I still don't feel bad, but I'm glad you didn't let me.
Yeah, I just, no. If we're doing this another year with Tyrone, so are you. We're not doing this. I was pissed at you. So, and it takes a lot to get me pissed. So.
Oh, I was pissed at everybody. Yeah. I was pissed at everybody. I mean, Jen Cohen, and I know she wasn't in charge at that point, but Jen Cohen, Scott Woodward, all those guys keeping him around. Ugh, I was just so sick and tired of seeing Tyrone Willingham with his microphone flipped up on top of his. Oh God.
Who do you think Tyrone Willingham is rooting for tonight? Do you think he even thinks Washington has a rooting interest for him?
He's probably not even watching the game. He's watching a TED talk or something.
No, I bet he's watching like some golf tournament in Coral Gables or something.
Yeah, I used to coach that team.
Golf's in Hawaii this week, guys.
Oh, okay. Well, there you go.
It's at a course that Kim and I have both played.
Yeah. And also big shout out, you know, since 1997, we have subscribers that have been with us since day one. We do. We have plenty of subscribers that have been with us 240 months. We have plenty of subscribers that have been with us 100 months. It's amazing. Our retention rate is really, really high. We built a hell of a community, and it's not always fun at time being the bartender behind the bar trying to keep the peace, but we seem to do a pretty good job of it. So let's go ahead and wrap this up, and just keep it tuned here at dogman.com. So when's our promo run end, Chris?
I think it ends tonight, if I remember right. I don't think it goes through till Tuesday, but I could be wrong. I'll double check that. But I'm pretty sure I'll post something in this story to let people know when the promo is ending.
Shoot an email. Let's extend it a couple of days, okay?
Okay. Well, right. I like your confidence, Kim. I appreciate your confidence.
All right. Hey, for all of us at dogman.com, including all of our former interns, Joe Kaiser, our first ever intern, is going to be here with his son, and he is an absolute wreck. And Josh Wodka is going to be with us today, and you know Henry Han. Yeah. And
Jonathan Martone.
Martone's going to be here. Eric Dorr is going to be here. So we've had a lot of amazing interns. So for all of our interns, everybody at the network, Brandon Huffman, Greg Biggins, Blair Angulo, all of those guys.
Cooper Patenya.
Yeah, just all of these guys.
Why do I feel like this is a farewell speech to the troops or something? What are we doing here?
No, it's an invitation to the party, boys. Okay. It's an invitation to the party. So let's get this done. For all of us at dogman.com, I'm Kim Grinnells. Along with Chris Fetters, Scott Eklund, go Dogs.
Should you ever set foot outside of the hotel, you will be shot.
Don't miss the new Showtime limited series based on the international bestseller. For the last 4 years, I've been a prisoner.
Why are they keeping you here?
Starring Emmy Award winner Ewan McGregor.
This is the brave new world that you dreamt of.
Be very careful. You are still a prisoner here.
Everything in this new world comes at cost.
This is still my country.
A Gentleman in Moscow. Now streaming on Paramount+. Only with the Paramount Plus with Showtime plan.